today the plan is to finish Siman Kuf Pei Hei. Oh, I should mention that on Sunday and Monday I'm going to be out of town, so there will be no shiur on Sunday and Monday. Maybe we should rethink whether we do shiur Tuesday this week, right, to make up for the... Okay, because Sunday, Monday, I'm going to be in Chicago, Baruch Hashem, sorry, Kedushin El Chasana, but, so, anyway, so today we're going to, the goal is to finish Siman Kuf Pei Hei. Tomorrow is to start Kuf Pei Vav. We probably won't even get as far as the Shulchan Aruch tomorrow, because unlike Siman Kuf Pei Hei, unlike everything we've really done, you know, everything we've done is based in a Gemara somewhere, but usually it's like been a line of Gemara, and then it's mostly like the way that we showed them in the post can interpret it. Kuf Pei Vav is really a sugya. It's like a daf and a half of Gemara at the end of the first parak of Maseches Nida, and you really just have to read the whole Gemara and read the Rishonim in the back of the Gemara, meaning the Rush and the Ran in the back of Maseches Shavuos. But in my fancy Gemara, they have the Ran and Shavuos printed in the back of Nida, in order to just even understand what the Shulchan Aruch is talking about. I mean, to read the Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef, essentially, if you look in Kuf Pei Vav, just quotes entire long passages from the Rush and from the Ran. So it's from the Ravid he quotes partially, but so that tomorrow we'll start going through that sugya, and that's a very relevant sugya halacha lemaisa, unless you've been married for, I don't know, a month, but you know, at least at the beginning, it's a very relevant sugya halacha lemaisa. So I guess it's relevant sugya even after that. But okay, we'll get to that. So, but first, our first order of business is Siman Kuf Pei Hei. So the topic we began to discuss was Huchzuka Nida, right? I think that's where we were in middle of that. The Gemara Maseches Ksubos Daf Ayin Beis Kiddushin Daf Pei Huchzuka Nida B'Shchanusa Baila Loka Aleha Mishum Nida. That if she's Huchzuka as a Nida, how is she Huchzuka as a Nida? She wears the big day needles, special begadim. So, and then you have Edim that saw that the husband was boel her in. After that, we assume she's a Vaday Nida. The Baal gets Malkus. So the Rashba in the Torah Sabayis says that if you're going to give the husband Malkus, obviously that means it's a Vaday Nida. And if it's a Vaday Nida, a Masla doesn't work. A Masla is only if we're taking her at her word. But we're no longer taking her at her word. This is a Vaday Nida to the extent that the husband is going to get Malkus. Very different than Amra Temeya, than Omeris Temeya Ani, where she's only usher based on Shavya Nafsha, based on her own statements, but not like a bearer of the Metzias, so to speak, that she is a Nida. So the Torah asks the Kasha that we started to go through the answers to. The Torah asks the Kasha, he says, V'teimahu, V'chi adiv huchska Nida b'shchenusea mikshom meres b'feirish Temeya Ani, sh'namena sh'lomar Torah Ani, al yidei amasla? He says, I don't understand. When she says Temeya Ani, she's actually telling you that she's Temeya. And yet that you're going to allow her to back out of. She puts on some clothing. She doesn't say Temeya Ani. She never expresses Tumah in an explicit way. And it's all a deal. Oh, she's wearing that clothing and it must be. And now that's a stronger statement? If anything, that would seem like a weaker statement. That's the Kasha of the tour. So last time we went through the first two Tirutz in the Chavis Das, and the Taz in the name of the Maral, right, to answer that question. Am I correct? Did we get that far? Yeah, the Chavis Das, and Taz in the name of Maral, and we started going through the Beis Yosef a little bit. So let's see. So Beis Yosef quotes that the Rashba himself asked this Kasha, and he says that she can tell a lie under pressure, but doing an action is a very different level, meaning that if she says Temeyani, so sometimes the person doesn't know exactly what to say, so it's a Yetzer Hara, but they'll say something that's not true. But to actually do something that is that perpetuates a sheker, that takes a much higher level of chutzpah, and therefore we would assume that that's not what she's doing. That if she was actually wearing big day needles, it was not just to perpetuate some sort of sheker, but rather that's the actual metzius. That's how the Beis Yosef is Matarit. We suggested a different approach, but that's how the Beis Yosef quotes from the Rashba, that the Rashba himself was Matarit. So now, the Bach points out that there seems to be a stira in Beis Yosef between what the Beis Yosef says over here in the name of the Rashba and the Beis Yosef in Siman Aleph in Hilchos Shechita. It used to be in Yeshiva when you learned Yaradeya, you had to learn Shechita and Melicha, and then you got to Bas B'Cholav and Taroves. My time, they had already, it used to be you have to do treifas also. By my time, they got rid of treifas. You did shchita, melicha, no machal yakum, no tilas kelim, because those shaylas never come up. It's only the malicha shaylas that come up. So then they realize, wait a second. The last time a rabbi answered a malicha shayla was, in 1940. So they got rid of shchita malicha, and instead we do machal yakum and things like that. Rabbi Hananya Berzon told me that his year, he was a classmate of Rabbi Shechter, so he's that age. He said his year in Smicha was the first year they got rid of treifas. It was the first year they didn't require treifas for, and they said, yeah, it never comes up anymore. And he said his first shteller was somewhere in, I don't remember where, like Virginia or something. And his first day in the Rabbanus, the local butcher comes, shows up and says, I have a chicken here. I don't know, what do I do with this chicken? So he's looking at the chicken. He says, he strokes his beard and he says, come back, I need to think about it. The butcher goes away. He calls up his father, who is a rabbi. He says, Dad, a butcher came with a chicken. What the heck am I supposed to do? Like, you couldn't even take a picture and just send it, on a WhatsApp or something. I don't know how we resolved that issue, but he told me that was, so when you think you don't have to know everything, something comes up that you have to know. Learning here for Smicha, we spent half the year on Shechita because Rabbi Gnak had good rate on Shechita, so Rabbi Gnak's Chavura spent half the year on Shechita. So I learned Shach and Taz in there, and Beis Yosef in Shechita. And then we took my Chavrusa and I took a one-day trip to a Shechita place in Scranton, David Elliott, chicken or poultry, whatever. And in that one day, we learned more than we learned in the entire previous 4 months. That was because if you don't see what's a chicken, then you don't know. And all the talk is worthless. Okay, so anyway, so the Beis Yosef, so the Bach points out that if you look in Beis Yosef in Siman Aleph, he says that if a shochet made a mark, Barosh Keves, on the head of the keves, in order to indicate that it's a treifa, because that's the way they used to do. They would mark it in order to, because you have a shachtes, you got a lot of animals around. So if there's an animal that's a treifa, you don't want it to be sold as a kshera. So he's believed with an amasla that it's not really a treifa. He just didn't want anyone to take it. That it was his, and he thought that if he leaves it as a kshera, someone else is going to make off with it. So he's believed. But So Bach says, wait a second. He did a maisa. It's not just words. And a maisa works. So how can you, Beis Yosef B'Shem, the Rashba over here, say that to say words, you can get away with an amasla to undo words, but you can't get away with an amasla to undo a maisa. Over there is a maisa marking the Rosh HaKeves. So he says, no, that's different, because, says the Bach, the only way to mark something as a treifa is to mark it. There are no words that would express, that would have solved his problem. I mean, his problem was someone was going to come and grab it. Someone was going to come and take it. Someone was going to come and be confused. There is no way to project to the entire world constantly everything he needs to tell them, which is that this is a treifa, this is a treifa, this is a treifa, don't take it, don't take it. Meaning, there are people coming in and out, and he doesn't know who's going to take it, he doesn't know who to communicate to. So the one way to communicate to everybody is by marking the Rosh HaKeves. But when it comes to a woman, there's only one person that cares if she's a Tameya, and that's her husband. So instead of doing a Maisa by putting on big day needles, she could have done better. She could have just told her husband. So the Maisa is going beyond the minimum that she could have done to accomplish the same task. That's how the Bach is metarets. So it's not that a Maisa is always such a strong thing that a person wouldn't do something untruthful. They wouldn't do something untruthful with the Maisa if they could have accomplished the same thing with Dibur. The Shach and Sivkat Ney quotes all of this, this Bach, and he's medayek that if you see from this Bach that Hecha Delo Haya Efshar Be'inyan Acher Ne'amenes. If you can come up with a case of Nida where there was no other way but to wear the Big Day Nidus, then she's going to be Ne'amenes. And he quotes the Tshuvas HaRamah, Simon Beis, where a woman who kept on giving birth in the 8th month of pregnancy, which was very, very dangerous. Nowadays, you give birth in the 8th month of pregnancy and there's a very, very high survival rate, not just survival rate, the baby will most often thrive and live a normal life and be just fine. but you know, the Gemara assumes if the baby dies in the eighth month of pregnancy, there's no chance that he's for sure going to die. So a woman in the, and you should realize, like, the adjustment, the infant mortality rate, the change really happened like less than 100 years ago, or like maybe 100 years ago. If you were born in America in the beginning of the 20th century, the infant mortality rate, I mean, you can Google it. It was crazy. Like, it's, but thank God for advances in medicine. But anyway, so this woman kept on giving birth in the eighth month of pregnancy. So she thought it was an ayin hara, so she wanted to hide her pregnancy because of ayin hara. So how do you get rid of ayin hara? What's the tried and tested way to get rid of ayin hara? No? You avoid attention, right? You avoid attention. That's how you get rid of ayin hara. I was waiting for everyone to say you wear a red string. That was not very good. The red string is also has a mar makom in the Tosefta Masechet Shabbos that it's asur mishum darkei amori. But there's no mar makom that I know of that says that's how you actually get rid of ayin hara. Nothing that was written before like 100 years ago for sure. So there's a Deborah Tzina Rav. There's a beautiful tshuva. I mean, it's a funny tshuva in Be'er Moshe. Deborah Tzina Rav says that he knows the Tosefta and Shabbos, and he knows that there's no Mar Makom for it. But his bubby insisted that they were right to Bendel to get rid of Ayin Hara, and my bubby was one very frum lady. He says so you can't accept that there's nothing to it. Interesting tshuva. If you look in Be'er Moshe, I don't have the exact Mar Makom, but you just look around, you'll find a lot of interesting tshuvas. Okay, so anyway, so the case was the 8th month of pregnancy. She tried to hide her pregnancy because of Ayin Hara. So how is she going to hide her pregnancy? By wearing big day needles, because even then, you know, if a woman was becoming a nida, it was understood that she wasn't pregnant. And even if the husband didn't realize that it was a ruse, that she was actually pregnant, she was really trying to hide it, she is believed with an amasla, because she had to do big day needles in order to avoid the Ayin Hara. Saying Tamei Ani would not have done it. L'chor over there, there's more reasons to say that she'd be believed, because you know, he would know that she's pregnant. L'chor, I mean, the husband should realize at some point, l'chor, that she's pregnant, especially if you're assuming that this is after Hukar Ubra. So probably he would have realized. But anyway, that's what the Shach quotes from the Tshuvas Ramah. That's all based on this diuk of the teretz that the Bach had given. That it's only the only time a masla does not work against an action is when that action was Plan B. But if that action is Plan A, then an amasla works against an action. So frek the taz in Sifkat and Beis, why doesn't the Ramah just answer in the tshuva that she's muteres? Because she must have told her husband in advance what she plans on doing. And whenever you have any kind of situation like this, there's something called the moda'a, that if you let someone know in advance that you have no das for what you're saying, and that what you're saying, what you're about to do is a joke. You know, someone says to his friend, check this out, look how I'm going to pull this guy's leg or something, and then you make a joke about something, so everyone knows that works. You give an amasal at Vareha. That's a beferish gemara in Kiddushin Daf Pei, that a moda'a in advance, a moda'a rather, works. So even according to the Maral, who says it's so much worse when the masses thought she was Tamea, a Modoa works against the masses also. A Modoa works Meikara, so she would certainly be believed. So the Shach in the Kudas HaKesef, on the side of the page, I'm a little lost here in my pages. Yeah, the stomach's here somewhere. The Shach in the Nekudas HaKesef writes, and the Shach in Sifkat Nei says that, it's a long shot, but the Shach in Sifkat Nei also says that the Ramah was trying to come up with a case that she would be believed even if she didn't tell the husband. I mean, that's the whole kudz. I mean, the Taz is assuming, of course, the husband's got to know. How does the husband not know that she's pregnant? So the Ramos could try to come up with a case in that tshuva where she didn't tell the husband and she would still be believed. So there's no moda'a. So there's no moda'a, but there was no other way that she could have expressed her pregnancy to avoid the ayin hara. So mela, it's going to, the amasa is going to work. Good. That is the that is the conversation that happens with the Shach and the Taz on the page. Now, when we talk about amasla, it's just kedai. I ask you guys to take a look, just because my makeup is still coming off. It's just kedai. It's disgusting. kedai to take a look in Shiuri Arav in Simin Yud Beis, which I asked you to take a look at. I will just say over quickly what Rav Soloveitchik has to say over there. When I was learning Yerideya, you know, the first time around, the biggest disadvantage we had was Shiuri Arav hadn't come out yet. So Yerideya could be very challenging and dry, and going through all the shachs and whatever. The Rav had a way of just making everything exciting. It's just like it. If now, if you learn through Yerideya, if you're getting a little bored, you open up a Shiuri Arav on a topic that you've done any time recently, and phew, and it's like you feel like you're back into the lumdus. It's like it energizes you. So anyway, in the Shiuri Arav in Yerideya Simin Yud Beis, he points out from the case of the Shochet, right, the case of the Shochet marking the Rosh HaKeves, that Eid Echad is Neman to be Chozer Al Yidei Masla, right? So, but that's really a Machlokas Rishon. The Shef Shmaitza has a major discussion about this in Shmaitza Vav. They say the Shef Shmaitza, is this a true story, that the Shef Shmaitza gave those as seven drashos during his Sheva Brachos? Right? Each Shmaitza was during his Sheva. He got married when he was, what, like 16, 17? And each one was a drasha during the Sheva Brachos. Yeah, if you're holding that there and learning, you can get married when you're 17. Right? So the Chavis Das in Sim Kuf Peheir, Salvation quotes, says that when we believe a person through Shavi Anafshe, everybody would agree you can be Chozal Yidei Masla. The Machlokas Rav and Shmuel is when the Ne'amamas comes from Eidechon and Bisurin. And we pass them like Rav, that Eid Echad could even be Chozal Yidei Masla. That even when you're applying Eid Echad and Bisurin, a Masla works. So Salvation raises the Kasha, that by Shnei Eidim we say, the Gemara in Kesubas Daf Yuches and Hezra Mem Dalit, that Kivin Shehigit, Shuvei Nechozer Magid, Afal Yidei Masla. That when you have Mamish Eidos, real Eidos, Shnei Eidim, there's a Kivin Shehigit, Shuvei Nechozer Magid, once you've said your Eidos, there is no backtracking, even Al Yidei Masla. So, fact of salvation, why should Eid Echad be any different? Kal Makom Shamin Etar Eid Echad, Arekan Shnayim, whenever you believe Neilechon as a din, like Shnei Eidim, so why should it be that Shnei Eidim cannot be Chozer Magid, but Neilechon with an Amasla can be? So he suggests that there's a fundamental difference between the Ne'emanos of Neilechon and the Ne'emanos of Shnei Eidim. That Shnei Eidim are believed because of Etzem Divrehem. We can't listen to anything else. Their words are 100% Ne'eman. Neilechon is believed not because of etzem devarav, but rather because of hochacha haba'a mikoach devarav. Meaning, the way I'll express it is, the impression that we get based on the words that he said. The words themselves aren't kadosh, but the idea that gets into our heads because of the words of the Eid Echad, that is where the ne'emanus comes from. The proof is that an Eid Echad doesn't really have to say anything. Erech Nem Bisurin, I mean, what happens? Well, we all know, you can eat at your own homes because Erech Nem Bisurin, right? And your mother, your wife, whoever cooks for you is believed to cook kosher food. But what happens if you show up and you forgot to ask your wife if tonight's dinner is kosher, right? And she never said anything. She just served it to you. So yet, Erech Nem Bisurin works over there, but where's the Eidos? No, the Eidos is that by the fact that she's serving it to you in your kosher kitchen and that she looks like a Beis Yaakov girl and, you know, she's tzanua and she's saying Tehillim all the time and she's running to Shiurim and she's doing Chesed and she's like 10 times frummer than you and she keeps on serving you food, so you have the right to assume that that food is kosher because of that. That's Eid Echad Nem Bisurin. So it's the impression that's created. It's not the actual dibor that's happening. Oh. So he says, if the Shach and Siman Alef Sukkotin Yud Gimel points out that if a Shochet just shechs without saying anything, you could eat it. Because he's a Shochet, he knows what he's doing, he shechs it, he doesn't have to say, I made it on this behemoth, and I made it on this behemoth, well, of course you could eat it. And that explains why the Mechaber holds that if a guy shechs, and Neid Echad says that it's pasul, but the Shochet insists that it's kosher, so we believe the Shochet. I would have thought not to believe him, because the other guy testified first. Right? The other guy testified first. Why would you believe the Shochet? The first Eid Echad, the first one on the scene is the Eid Echad that's never been certain that we say, Harei Kan Shnayim, right? So why would you believe the Shochet? He should have been granted the Ne'emanus of two people immediately. The other guy should have been granted the Ne'emanus of two people if he spoke before the Shochet. Elamai, it must be that by silently shechting and just letting it go without marking it as a treifa, the Shochet is testifying, Kishnei Eidim, Eidechon and Bisurin, Kishnei Eidim, that everything is kosher. And his testimony precedes the testimony of the Eretz Machish. So he's actually the first Eidos. It's a fascinating idea that Shnei Eidim Etzem Divrehem is the Eidos. There are types of Eidos where you don't need any words. But that's when Davar Shabierva, in Davar Shabierva Pachs Mishnayim, you have Eidei Kiddushin. Your Eidei Kiddushin don't have to speak. Your Eidei Managet don't have to speak. But when we talk about Eidos on the Maisa, Eidos on Dine Mamnus, Eidos in criminal law, that we're trying to prosecute somebody for some spiritual or interpersonal crime, that he actually has to say Eidos. I thought like a mushel for this idea. It's just a mushel, but it's like the difference between the way the Achronim explained Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in his Mavo, the Sefer Emes Liakov. If you've never read it, read it. It's very kedai. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in general. Someone just texted me yesterday, a guy in my shul who's a very learned person and is constantly learning, and he's always preparing chaburas and shiurim, and so he said that he was working really hard on a particular inyan in Tanakh, and he thought he had a mahalech that he like, and he just randomly hadn't opened up an Emes Yaakov in a long time. He said in one little paragraph, Rabbi Yaakov took his months of work and said it better, more concisely, more to the point. And you know, but the same idea. So you got to appreciate Rabbi Yaakov. So anyway, so in the Mavot to Emes Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov describes the difference between Torah versus Nevi'im and Ksuvim, and you find these kinds of discussions in the Kisvei Maariz Chiyus and in other places as well that discuss these kinds of things. And Rabbi Yaakov writes that. That you know, the context is he's discussing what's called mikra, right? Is mikra all of Tanakh or is mikra just Torah? When the you know shlish b'mikra, shlish b'mishnah, shlish b'talmud, you weren't kedushin. How you supposed to spend your day, right? Does that mean one third of the day in Tanakh, one third of the day in Chumash? So pashtos in that case, Tanakh, right? Ben chamesh l'mikra, ben eser l'mishnah, it's Tanakh. Yet the Gemara Megillah, when it darshins a pasuk and tells us how Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us everything from our Sinai, has Mikra zu Torah and something else as Nevi'im Ksuvim. I remember which words represent Nevi'im Ksuvim, right? So sometimes Mikra apparently means only Torah. So Rabbi Yaakov says it's all relative. Relative to Torah Shebal Peh, all of Tanakh is Mikra. Rabbi Yaakov, you should know, as far as Gedolim are concerned, he was known amongst the Gedolim as the greatest Baki in Tanakh. They say he didn't only know Tanakh Bal Peh, he knew all the trup of Tanakh Bal Peh. That he was a great, and you'll see in the Emes Yaakov, he has a lot of vartlach based on the trup of Psukim, not only in Chumash, and Psukim in Nach. So I know it's strange, like, well, what is he learning Nach for, right? maybe he also studied the Mishnah that said Ben Chumash Lemikra. So the. So he said, when you're dealing with the rest of Torah Shebal Peh, so all of Tanakh is more mikra than the rest of the Torah Shebal Peh, in that it's supposed to be read from a text, whereas Torah Shebal Peh is not. But in comparison to Nevi'im and Ksuvim, Torah is more mikra than Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Why? Because mikra means that there's something about reading it. And he says, unlike Nevi'im and Ksuvim, if you read Psukim of Torah without understanding what you're reading, there's a partial kiyum of Talmud Torah. He says, you don't have that by Nevi'im Ksuvim. Nevi'im Ksuvim, if you read it and you don't know what you're reading, then it's not a kiyum of Talmud Torah. He suggests, that's why we do Shnayim Mikra Ve'echa Targum. One Mikra just to demonstrate that there is a kiyum of Talmud Torah just by reading, and then the next time with Targum, to show that there's an additional kiyum of Talmud Torah to actually understand what you're reading. Right? So, I just thought, so what's why? Why is that true? Because what's valuable about the Torah is that every single word was given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to Moshe Rabbeinu. So the words were chosen by the Ribbono Shel Olam. By Nevi'im, the words weren't chosen by the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam showed the Navi a vision, and then the Navi had to translate that vision into words. So it's sort of like the impression that the Navi got, but not the words that the Navi got. So I thought this was like a good mashal. You know, sometimes the words themselves are valuable, like by Mikra, by Chumash, the words themselves are the Kedusha, whereas the Nevi'im Ksuvim, it's the ideas that are Kedusha, but they were expressed in the words that the Navi came up with. Obviously, we can't change those words, and the Navi is most equipped to express them to us, but they're not the words of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. It's a similar idea over here. Again, it's a mashal. Over here, what do we have? That when it's shnei edim, it's their words that I'm listening to. When it comes to an eid echad, it's not his words. It's the impression he's making on me. So if he could never change words that he had said, kiven shegit shuvei nechazer mani. But impressions can change. Right? And a masla can change my impression of what just happened over here, of what the whole story was. So that's how Rav Salve explains. Question?
Why would Chazal phrase it as Eidah Hamehamim Bissur? They're really just saying people are Nehemah Bissur.
You mean why call it an aid?
It's not about Eid Echa, it's just about people. People are Nehemah.
Right, okay. Yeah, I don't know if we get that. Yeah, I don't know if it's a kasha. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
That's the halachic way of like
Eidos. Meaning
it doesn't have the same.
Because it's right. Meaning the end of the sentence is Kol Malkus Shemini Tarei Edachad Harei Kan Shnayim. It's as strong as Shnei Eidim. Meaning that's to express its strength, I guess.
So does a masla work then by when she establishes herself with Beit Din Yehuda?
If she establishes,
if it's changing the impression, if the masla is just changing the impression, so then. Does it also change the impression made by the
Beit Din? So he's not going to deny the halacha, but you'll have to go with one of the terutzim that we had as to why it doesn't. Right? In one of the explanations that we had. Now, two more topics over here that we have to discuss. One is when it's her word against somebody else. So she says, Chacham Ploni Tierli, and the Chacham says, Ploni, that's me. I was never Tierla, right? Maybe you meant Rabbi Bruce Ginsburg, right? It wasn't me. So in Ksubas Tafayin Beis, the Gemara says the examples of Mishamashto Nida Yotzeis B'lo Ksuba is that the example of Mishamashto Nida Yotzeis B'lo Ksuba is this case. Meaning, when the Gemara says if a woman is Mishamash, her husband is Nida, the Gemara, what's the interest of the Gemara in Ksubas to talk about a woman having Tashmish when she's in Nida? What's that to Ksuba? Because we have to know when the halacha by Ksuba is very simple. If whoever destroyed the marriage pays for it, right? Meaning if the marriage has to end, then whoever ruined it pays for it. So if a woman is machshil her husband in nidus, she destroyed the marriage if she didn't tell him, right? She doesn't have to be religious. I mean, everyone has to be religious. But her lack of general commitment to avodas Hashem is not considered a destruction of the marriage. Her making it impossible for him to live with her, that's the destruction of the marriage. So we never find that an Isha Mechalel Shabbos is Mafsid Ksubasa. She doesn't lose her Ksuba. She would absolutely still get her Ksuba. But a woman who's Machshel, her husband, a woman who eats not kosher, does not lose her Ksuba. If she's Machshel, her husband, Machalel Sasuros, then she loses her Ksuba. So in that context, the Gemara says, Mishamashto Nida, if she sleeps with him and she's in Nida, so Yotzi's below Ksuba. So the Gemara says, what does it mean, Mishamashto Nida? That she said, Chacham Ploni Tierli, and the Chacham said, sorry lady, never met you before, I was never Matar anything for you. So the Ran over there quotes Machloks Rishonim, whether the Chacham is believed, and the Rashba says no, but even the Rashba only says when it comes to being Mafsid Ksubasa that the Chacham is not believed. But everybody agrees that she is Temeya Labaila, meaning that we can no longer take her word that Chacham Ploni Tierli, because her entire Ne'amonis was hanging her hat on that Chacham. To make her lose a Ksuba, that's already a Dina Mamanis issue. So if Dina Mamanis, you can eat Shnei Edim, take away a Ksuba, says the Rashba. But when it comes to the status of Nida, so she was hanging her whole Ne'amonis on him, and he denies it. And the Ramban, Sif Gimel, quotes this, right? He says, the Rama writes, Amrlo, at the end of Siv Gimel, Amrlo ploni chacham hitili kesem zeh, v'chacham omr shimishakeres, ha-chacham neman utzmeahi. The chacham is believed. The Biragra points out, the Ra'a and the Ritva quote Ramban, that the chacham is even believed the hafsik subasa. Again, that's the Ramban, against the Shitas HaRashba, who says that the chacham is not believed the hafsik subasa. Good. Comes along the Taz in Siv Katan Gimel, and says the Taz, nearly Dafka Chacham Atzma, that only the Chacham is believed. Kivin she samechas alav ishtakach shikra, because she put her entire nemanos on the shoulders of the Chacham, and now it turned out to be a lie. Mashen kinim eina Chacham lepaneinu, ve'inachad meyid sha Chacham asala eino neman. If the Chacham is not here, but there's an eidach that says, "Oh, I was there, and the Chacham asered. I heard the Chacham asered." then that person, that Eid Echad, is not going to be believed. Only the Chacham is believed against her. The Eid Echad that the Chacham was Metame is not believed because Kamakam Sheminitar Eid Echad, Harei Kan Shnayim. Meaning she was not Tola her Ne'amanos on this random guy who's saying what the Chacham said. She was Tola her Ne'amanos on the Chacham. So if the Chacham denies it, that's a different story. Comes along the Chavz Das, Sivkat Nevav, and the Chavz Das explains that the Ne'amanos HaChacham is that she clearly doesn't know the din, right? Meaning she doesn't know what the halacha is, and for her to say that it's a maritahar wouldn't mean anything. She doesn't know what a maritahar is, what a maritame is. Obviously, it's yadua that there was a shayla. There was some sort of kesem. The husband saw the kesem. They know that there was a shayla. And we equally know that she has no training to answer that shayla. So she has no ne'amanus in her own right. So that's what it means, that she's being told of the ne'amanus on the chacham, because she couldn't possibly know the answer. Whereas she's being made on what the chacham says. He's being made on the actual shayla. She can't be made on the shayla. The chacham is actually being made on the shayla. Furthermore, even if she's telling the truth that he was matir, now he's saying that it's asur, says the Chavz Das. And he's entitled to change his mind. Someone gives a psak halacha, they're entitled to change their mind of the psak halacha and say, you know what? Maybe I did tell you it was Torah. It's not. I messed up. It's a humbling phone call to make, by the way. As a rabbi, at some point in your life, you'll probably have to make that phone call. I mean, my bracha to you is that you shouldn't have to. You should never, ever make a mistake. But, you know, rabbis are human and they make mistakes too. Hopefully it won't be a serious issue of, oh, remember when I told you you can go to the mikveh, like, a few days ago? You really couldn't, you know, car race. You know, hopefully it'll be something smaller. But sometimes a rabbi has to call and say, I thought about it again. I looked into it. I missed something obvious. I didn't look it up the way I should have. I did, you know, whatever it is, I made a mistake, and hopefully you'll have an understanding about the matter.
If the rabbi is only Naaman because he's able to change his mind, so why does that turn out to a machshuva's mind? If we're saying that we're not saying that she was machshuva.
No, meaning if that were the case, if you were to say then in a chenami she would not be considered machshuva's mind, right? But as far as her status right now, is she a Nida or is she not a Nida? So then the Chacham would be Nevin. But in a Chinami, of course, right, of course. It would not be Makshilas Baila. Now, it turns out, according to the Chavz Das, if the Chacham said she never asked, she says, I asked, Chacham said she never asked, would she be believed? Meaning, if the whole reason the Chacham has greater Nemonis than she has was because she's being made about a conversation, he's being made about a Shaila. Right? Well, if they're both being made about a conversation, she's saying it happened, he's saying it never happened, so maybe she's believed, according to the Chavz Das. You know, Amar lo ploni chacham hiter li kesem zeva, chacham amar shehi mishakeres. What does that mean? There are two ways she could be lying. One is, I never met you before, lady, we never had this conversation. Or the second one is, no, you asked the Shaila, asked and answered that stale. According to the Chavz Das, the Chor would turn out that the Chacham is, it's not like, see, you know, with Smicha you get this, cloak of I don't know what you would call it, of invincibility, you know, like now all of a sudden you are Halavai, that everyone who gets Smicha should be of such a high moral standing. There's no automatic Ne'amanus. It happens to be many of the Achronim disagree with that. But that's what it would turn out. So Rav Vazner points out that the Shoshana Mudavid and the Malbushei Tahara, he quotes a bunch of Achronish Svarim that all disagree. Rav Vazner thinks that she should be Ne'amanus because, he says, Shchiach harbe sha'anashim yodim shemutar v'tahar acheinim rotim lomar zos me'atzman v'omrim b'shem acher k'dei she'yikablu mehem. Wow. Harotzu litlos yitla bi'ilam gadol. So v'lchein afshar sha'chachim lomar klal. El Shemei Atzma Amra Tahar Vein Kan Sheker V'Ne'emenes. Says Rav Vazner, sometimes people say Rav Salvechik said, even if Rav Salvechik didn't say, just because it's true and they want you to listen to them. He doesn't say Rav Salvechik. I guess he probably wouldn't have. But sometimes people say, they're Tola Bilan Gadol. They say the name of Nadim Gadol. It's Magen Avram. Magen Avram says Mutter, right? Based on the Gemara. Where's the Magen Avram? Kufnun Ches, right? Where it has all those things. all those random things that didn't make it into Shulchan Aruch, right? Isn't there such a Magen Avraham? There's a whole collection of mechita, like random things that just didn't make it into Shulchan Aruch somehow. He says, oh, by the way, here are a bunch of halachas that didn't make it into Shulchan Aruch. So Mishnah Berurah quotes most of it. There's in fact a little kuntras called Shichas HaOmer, except Omer with an aleph, Shichas HaOmer, of halachas that the Shulchan Aruch forgot to quote, but that are like halachas that no one argues on in the Gemara, that somehow, for some unknown reasons. You can find it in Hebrew books, probably. So why did I say that? Yeah, Sasra Vaz was an interesting svara, that it could be that the woman said Chacham Blani, and even if he denies it, maybe if we're assessing that she knew that it was mutter, she just knew that, that there's a trust issue in the marriage, and that the husband doesn't believe her, and she has to say, I asked the rabbi, that's the chara against the Ramada. Right? The Ramah says that the Chacham is believed. Just another point before we move to the next topic, I'll take a question in a second. The Marsham in Das Torah says that in a place where the minig is, and Marsham sounds like this was a very common practice, the minig is that the mikvah lady presents all the shaylas. That meaning a woman wouldn't go to the rabbi with the shayla, that a woman would go to the mikvah lady would present all the shaylas to the rabbi. So he says if there's a place where you have a mikvah lady who obviously knows a lot about Hilchos Nida, so she knows how to ask a shayla, and she knows what's a shayla, what's not a shayla, and she would bring everything to the chacham, and the mikvah lady says that the chacham said aser, says the Marsham, we'd believe the mikvah lady more than the woman. That's against the Chavis Das. Meaning again, the Chavis Das holds that the whole name of the chacham is because he's being made about the etzem shayla. The mikvah lady's not being made about the etzem shayla. It's she said, right? They're being made about a conversation. But the Chavis Das apparently thinks that the Ne'emanus of, I mean, the Marsham apparently thinks the Ne'emanus of the Chacham is not fundamental to what they're being made about. It's, you have to trust who the source is. I think Rav Shechter writes in his Hakdamah to Nefesh HaRav that he quotes the source of a lot of the different things that he says from the Rav, because you have to know who the source is, right? Sometimes, Rav had a lot of Talmidim, some of them are more trustworthy than others. The Gemara says that about some of the Amoraim, that the Amora that sat and learned for and chazed everything over 40 times with the Rebbe before he ever said, so it's a more trustworthy source than the Amora that happened to pass through town and spent his man learning in the yeshiva over there and didn't even understand the nuances of the Rebbe's language, right? So obviously, you have to, so the Ne'emanus of the Chacham, because when you're dealing with a matter of halacha, the Chacham is greater Ne'emanus than the Isha. A totally different view of this whole topic, right? So you have the Chavis Das, that it's a very technical halachic ne'emanus based on what you're being made about, and the Marsham, just like who you're going to trust, you know? So you have to assess who you're going to trust more. So the mikvah lady is more trustworthy than some woman who we don't know who she is.
Can you explain her
Yeah, no, not really. I mean, I could tell you what the words that he says, but I don't think it fits the Ramah. But he's trying to suggest that the woman's always going to be Ne'emenes, even, he says, bismaneinu, because even when the Chacham denies it, because sometimes you say things in the name of a Chacham that a Chacham didn't say, just because that's the only way what you say is going to be listened to. And that's what I just alluded to. It's not totally out of left field. There's Magen Avraham that says that you're actually allowed to do that. I don't think that's the practice anymore. When I say I don't think it's a practice, not that I don't think it's a practice to do, I don't think it's the practice to think that that's okay anymore. But there's a Magen Avraham that says that you're allowed to do that. I think generally we assume that that's not a good idea. You know, the assumption was that when people would do that, it was something that they knew the Birur was 100% correct. But now, anytime someone has some Mishagas that they want to say, and they're going to just say, oh, this Gadol said it, that Gadol said it, that's such a bizayin to Talmidei Chacham. It's one thing if you're saying things that are correct that he would have said, I just never had the conversation with him, right? You have to be honest about what someone would have said and what they wouldn't have said. There's a great, my son is taking Itamar Rosenzweig's class on, I don't know what it's on, but he had to order a book on halacha, Chaim Sabin's book on halacha. So he has a great, I didn't read the book at all, I just opened the front page and he has like a dedication to Rav Lichtenstein. Anyone see this? It's amazing. Amazing line. He says something along the lines of, I don't remember the exact words, to Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, who never would have written this book, but without whom it couldn't have been written. So that's integrity. Meaning, I'm not saying that he said this. He wouldn't have even said this. But I'm saying that he educated me, and I'm saying it, right? Meaning that I think if I'm touching it correctly, right? I assume that's what he meant. So, but when you have every Amaretz just wants to be told, whatever halachos and hashkafos that he has, his hashkafos hachayim to the chacham, so I heard in the name of Rav Soloveitchik, there's no such thing as borer. What? That's not possible. So that you can't do. Okay, last topic in the siman. A woman becomes a nida in the middle of Tashmish. So this is a Gemara in Shavuos Daf Yud Zayin Daf Yud Ches. And the Gemara in Shavuos says what his reaction should be to be nois tziparna of bakarka or ba'aretz, v'lo yozuz mi makomo. He should dig his fingernails into the ground, not move, ad sheyamu se'ever, until his erection goes away, and then he should pull out be'ever meis. Right, that's the Gemara, that's the halacha. The Rambam in the fourth paragraph of Sir Bia Halachi Aleph says that if he chooses to pull out be'ever chai, then he's chayiv karis. Meaning, if he doesn't wait for ever meis, then it's chayiv karis, because every hana'as tashmish that he does be'kavana with a nida is a chayiv karis. So up until that point, it wasn't it was total onus, right? It wasn't be'kavana at all. But now he knows she's a nida. She just said, I became a nida. So now he knows she's a nida, and he's pulling out and he's getting that hanos tashmish. That's a chiv karis. So Beis Yosef quotes a Mordechai in Masach HaShavuos that if a man is porish be'ever chai, he needs to do tshuva. And he quotes a maisa where a guy asked a shaila, and it was the 10th day of Chodesh Iyar. And he was told that the way to do tshuva is to fast one day a week until Rosh Hashanah, from Yud Iyar till Rosh Hashanah, fast one day a week, and to give 12 pshitim l'tzedakah, whatever kind of coin that is. But his wife doesn't need any kapara at all. So it's interesting just because you get to see the darkei tshuva, meaning what they recommended for tshuva. Feeling it in the wallet and fasting. Right, those were the recommendations of how to do tshuva. The Darkei Moshe has a girs in the Tshuvas Maram that says to fast 2 days a week, give 12 pshitim each day, and also no meat and no wine. Wow, a little bit more. In the Ramban Sifdalid, right, the Ramah also suggests how to do it, and he says you should fast 40 days. Right, that's what he says. He didn't have time to call the rabbi and ask a shayla at the moment, so he was porish. She said tamei, and he freaked out and he just immediately pulled out. So he signed 40 days. 2 days a week. And the nights sasa basar v'yayin. Yain Abbasar, it's Machlok Sachron, and what he means by that, the nights before the fast or the nights after the fast, that are Asar B'Basar Yain. It's interesting that there is such a notion that the night before the fast, you understand, right? Because that's the same halachic day. That there's such a notion of not having Basar Yain the night after a fast. But we're familiar with this from Hilchos Tisha B'Av, right? When, like we just had the past couple of years, where Tisha B'Av is Chal B'Shabbos. So all the halachs of the 9 days end as soon as Tisha B'Av is over, except Basar V'yayin. Why? Because Basar V'yayin is not just the halacha of the 9 days, it's the halacha of Motzai HaTainis. That on Motzai HaTainis, you don't have Basar V'yayin. Most of the time, most people aren't eating fleishigs on Motzai HaTainis anyway, unless you're like a teenage boy. Most of the time you're having milchigs because you still have a positive relationship you want to maintain a positive relationship with your stomach. But anyway, so that's a machlok zachron, what the Ramah means by that. Is it the night before or the night after? It's also interesting. The night before, does the night before always take on the status of a fast? Legabe what does it take on the status of a fast day? Right, not really the conversation to have for now. It actually will come up somewhere else in Hilchos Nida. But there's a discussion with Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Moshe, Machlokas. Let's say the Shailah Rav Moshe had, if a person wanted to get married on Motzai Shabbos when Sunday was Shavas or B'tamas. So you're allowed to get married on Motzai Shabbos. So Moshe thinks it's Tali and Machlokas Baal Amor and Ramban in the beginning of Masechus Pesachim. It's a Ramosha, to immediately think of Baal Amor, Ramban, and Pesachim when you get such a Shaila. And Rav Soloveitchik had a Torah Shalom in Hilchos Nida. That said, maybe not that way. So, okay, so we'll have to get there, Be'ez Hashem. But, so anyway, so this is the methods of fasting. The Rama says if he can't fast, he should give tzedakah with an amount that depends on his wealth, and do as much tshuva as he can. So what does it mean, do as much tshuva as he can? So Rav Osman points out what should be obvious to us, and these kinds of things come up, these kinds of shailas come up, people want to know, they've done averos, and they want to know how to do tshuva. So Rav Osman says, Eina kavana bezeh laharbos b'sigufim. It doesn't mean to afflict yourself too much. Don't read through too much of tshuvas hamishkal and what to do in order to... How many whips do I need in order, you know, a day from a... To, no, not sigufim. Ki ein kol adam yachol la'amod bezeh. Not everybody... is able to withstand such a thing, and I would say bizmanenu, nobody really. Elo laharbus b'tshuva b'charata v'azivasachet. The ikra tshuva for us has to be charata azivasachet v'lev nishbar, and to actually be broken hearted about it. A lot of times people think that becoming a bal tshuva just means that you're not going to do it anymore. That's part of it. Azivasachet is very important, but there is this actual critical element of charata that a person has to actually regret what they have done. Sometimes you hear people talking about averos they have done in the past, and it, you know, they're talking so nostalgically and laughing and whatever, you know, and enjoying. Oh, remember that time that we embarrassed that girl, or that we did this to that guy, and you know, from high school days or whatever. And it's like now, like you're a frum guy, and you're, yeah, and it doesn't sound like charata, you know, like you're listening. That doesn't sound like charata. So that doesn't, that's l'chora, not tshuva. Tshuva means to actually feel bad about it. Larbus b'torah, ma'asim tovim. Torah is the best path to tshuva. I just saw on Yayu Torah there was the first year of the Zman given by. He lives in my neighborhood. I'm forgetting his name. Chassidish fellow that comes and gives the Chassidus Chaburus here, no? Rumusin, right, yeah. So his kids go to yeshiva with my kids. So he's, so that was about Torah is the best way of doing tshuva. Right, there's a lot of marmakomos on that. How Torah and tshuva are very, very much connected. Hashivenu avinu sarasecha, right? Hashivenu avinu. The Sarasecha, tshuva is to Torah. So that's the way we're supposed to do tshuva. And v'nir sharoi sheishad and heitav hilchus nida k'tshuvas hamishkal leval yichashol b'yisurin nida. And that's something, if you look in Poskim and they talk about people who want to know how to do tshuva, they always recommend that. That whatever area of halacha you stumbled in, learn that area of halacha really well. Because generally when people do averos, even though it doesn't apply to this example, very often people do averos because they weren't paying careful enough attention. And a way to pay more careful attention is by having it in the center of your consciousness, and the way to do that is by learning about the topic. Right? That's why a person doesn't have aver b'shogeg, he's chayav v'chatas. Why is he chayav v'chatas? It was an accident. Yeah, you weren't really paying attention. If you were really paying careful attention to what you're doing, those kinds of accidents don't happen. So, you know, it's kedai to take a look. If you've never seen it before, the Yehuda Madura Kama or Chayim Simon Lamed Hei, that's probably the most famous tshuva out there about how to do tshuva. The Nadav Yehuda was asked a lot of crazy shailas, and I remember when I was, I once went to pick up my wife when we were not yet engaged, and I was early. I got to Edison early, so because I lived in Lawrence and she lived in Edison, so like you have to leave yourself a lot of time to figure out, you know, how you're going to get there. So I went to Or Torah, to the shul there, and I just opened up another view. Then I figured I'd just read the first tshuva, and I had never seen it yet. I had never seen that tshuva. And I opened up Madura Kamar Chaim Sim Lamed Hei. Oh, this looks interesting. Oh my gosh! If you've never seen the tshuva, I mean, this fellow who was yeshiva bachur and learning by in a yeshiva, and he was being put up at someone's house, and he was learning about Smad Maruba, and he was so serious, and Elamai, he was just having an affair with the woman of the house for 3 years, and now it's awkward because he's engaged to their daughter, and he's not really sure, like, how does he tell the father-in-law? Does he have to tell the father-in-law that, by the way, your wife is Asura Labaila because she was sleeping with me for the past 3 years, and by the way, do you mind supporting me when I'm learning in Kailal? You know, like, it's just going to be, the whole conversation is going to be very difficult. And so yes, the first half of the tshuva is about Kavod HaBrios. Right, Gadol Kavod HaBrios Shidoch Alos Seisha B'Torah, and what the Gedarim of that are, and to yourselves, and the Gemara Brachos Taf Yutes, and the Rambam and the Rush, and you know how it's whether he has to tell him what's called Shevi Al Tase, right? You know, that's That's the first half of the tshuva, which in Lamdas is a beautiful tshuva. It's so clear. It's Nadav Yehuda was an incredible writer. He just wrote in such a clear and engaging kind of way. So the first half of the tshuva, but then the second half of the tshuva, the guy wanted to know, how do I do tshuva for this? And he wrote that when you're prescribing what to do, just keep in mind, I'm learning Vasmada Atzuma. I really don't have the kochos to fast very much because of my very serious learning schedule. So Nadav Yehuda told him, you know, that the ikar of tshuva is not really the fasting. The ikar of tshuva is aziva sachet and real charata and throwing yourself into Talmud Torah and to doing mitzvot. And to Rav Asher Weiss has a tshuva, a guy who found his tefillin to be puzzled after 50 years of wearing tefillin. They were missing a letter or something. So totally puzzled. How does he do tshuva for that? Sponsor tefillin for someone who can't afford it. Learn hilchas tefillin. Right? That's the way that's the mesorah of how you're supposed to handle these things. The Ramah then adds that if she found blood after tashmish shalobishas vesta, then it's a total ones and it's no need for kapara. So some rishonim say that the guy should be mizdazeya. If you look in the lashonos of the rishonim over here, other rishonim say that he should not be mizdazeya. So Beis Yosef says they both mean the same thing. Means he shouldn't move at all, but he should be emotionally trembling. Meaning physically he shouldn't move, but emotionally he should be trembling. The Ramah quotes that idea that he should tremble, and then the Ramah adds that he should stand on all fours so that he doesn't even get pleasure from bodily contact with the woman. And Pischi Tshuv and Sivkan Yud quotes from the Chavis Das and Sivkan Zayin that if it was B'shas Vesta and they realized that it was the Veset in the middle of Tashmish, ooh, different case. Not that she says, Tameyani, that she says, hey, what's the date? And he's like, whatever. And she's like, oh my gosh, the Mikvah calendar app just sent me a notice that's my Shas Vesta. So then he said, so the Piskachuv quotes from Chavzda is very interesting, that you'd also have to be Parish Bever Mace, not to get Anas Tashmish from her B'Shas Vesta. So the Pardes Rimonim, he quotes, disagrees, because by a Nida, the Isser is the Guf HaTashmish, and pulling out Be'ever Chai is an act of Tashmish. By Veset, the Isser is Shematira, right? And therefore, the longer you continue, the longer you extend it, the greater the Chashash of Shematira. So if anything, you just make it end as quickly as you can, which is very mistaver to me. I find it hard to believe that B'Shas Vesta, that like the Chavis Das says, that you'd have to wait for Ever Meis, B'Shas Vesta. I'm going to have to end a little bit earlier. Penner asked me to come to his office right now, so I apologize. I'm not going to be able to sit and answer questions right now, but we'll be here tomorrow. So tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, we'll begin Siman Kuf Pei Vav, but start without opening the Shulchan Aruch. Start with Nida, the last daf and a half of the first parak, and the Rush in the back of the Gemara, and if you can, the Ran in Masechet Shavuos on that topic. The topic in Kuf Pei Vav is going to be about Pedikos, Kodem, and Achar Tashmish. So that's the time. We're going to do that tomorrow. Again, I apologize that I have to run upstairs.